Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
You're very welcome along to Thursday evening's football show. It's a special football show tonight because John Giles is in studio with us. Normally at 7:30, you've been very good to hang on, and there is a lot to talk about. It's been quite a week. We've spoken a lot about Manchester United and Chelsea over the last couple of weeks, and get the sense that probably the results, the manner of their performances in Europe this week, did they come as any sort of a surprise?
Well, the Manchester United performance came as a surprise, Nathan. They got a no-score draw, as we know, in Seville, and I think people were expecting an awful lot more. Haven't had a very good result on Saturday against Liverpool, probably their biggest rivals. And to have a performance like we had was very disappointing, to say the least. And obviously the supporters were very, very unhappy. Mourinho, again, didn't cover himself in glory with the post-match interview, where he was very relaxed, sitting back, saying, well, what's the big deal? You know, these things happen. And I sat here years ago when we beat Manchester United as if it wasn't a disappointment. And I just saw a bit in the paper this morning where the supporters were more angry about the post-match interview than they were about the performance. I just can't understand why and what he was doing.
So before we get into what happened on Tuesday night, maybe we'll talk about Saturday then and the performance against Liverpool. What did he get right on Saturday?
Well, first of all, he got the team selection right. And, you know, people talk about plans in football and all the various different things that we hear. You know, picking the team is the most important tactic. You know, the player, teams you have at your disposal, pick the best team that you have at your disposal. That's the main tactic. Very few people mention that. And against Liverpool, obviously the team played very, very well, particularly Rashford, who hadn't been in the team, who was a very, very talented individual, played on the left wing, scored two terrific goals. And then it comes to Wednesday night. Was it Wednesday night, Tuesday night?
Tuesday night.
Rashford is playing on the right wing. The team played well overall. Mata played quite well. The Scottish lad,
McTominay
played. He praised him very, very much during the week. Weren't playing 4 days later. They're not on the pitch. And you got Fellaini on the pitch for some reason. So obviously the team selection, you have to start with, wasn't right. And they didn't perform at all. And the Spanish team, Seville, played well. Actually, played them off the pitch, Nathan, which was bad. And you see, like, I don't think he's flavoured in the month with the Manchester United supporters anyway. Now, the Liverpool match brought a lot of good response.
Yeah, you would wonder what the fallout to Tuesday would have been if they hadn't got the win against Liverpool on Saturday.
Exactly. You could understand. But they actually did okay. They didn't. I don't think they played great against Liverpool. I think, Liverpool gave them the match in many ways. Two long kickouts, but that's Klopp's problem, which we're not talking about now. But it was easy for Manchester United in that sense. Two long kicks, and then Liverpool had more possession of the ball for the rest of the match. So they obviously defended particularly well. The Manchester United, I think when you get in that position, you should go for the next one and really finish Liverpool off, because they were hanging on a bit near the end. But however, it was a good performance. It was a good win. It was a vital win at this stage of the season for Manchester United, which takes you on to a good position going into a big match like the Champions League. To win at home, then you're into the quarterfinals. But he picks a different team altogether. Now, why you would pick a different team to play Seville, who were not regarded as one of the top teams, when you're playing at home, to get at them, do what you did against Liverpool in going forward in that way, and it didn't happen. And they were well outplayed. I mean, this could have been 4-1 in the finish.
Does Mourinho spend too much time thinking about what the opposition side are going to do rather than what his own team are going to do?
I don't think so in the past. You know, you've got to go back over a long period of time with Mourinho. I think he's a great coach. And what he did, I think he was sometimes criticised more than he should have been for being a defensive coach. I mean, if you go back to his Chelsea days, for example, with John Terry and these guys and Carvalho and all these terrific players that he had, what he did well was, I think he was regarded as a defensive coach, because when they had to defend, they defended for a long time because they didn't concede a goal. Like if you take Arsenal, Liverpool, for example, they're not regarded as defensive coaches because they concede a goal straight away. Mourinho wouldn't let anybody score. But if you look at his record, he scored as many goals as anybody else when they were winning things. So like his attitude, and I heard him last week where he said, well, you defend when you haven't got the ball and you attack when you have the ball. Now, I think this season he's become more defensive. Now, he parked the bus at Liverpool, for example, which I think was a bad mistake. And I think even on Saturday, despite the fact that they won, could have gone for Liverpool a bit more where they're at the weakest. But anyway, he won, and it was a very good win for them at this particular stage of the season. So when you go into the next match, like having done what he did against Liverpool, he changes it completely. So he's responsible for the performance in many ways. And then you go to the post-match interview where he's easy come, easy go, but it happens. You know, I sat here in this seat, having beaten Manchester United years ago, totally against anything. I think he should have said, look, we were terrible tonight. I'm responsible for it. I picked the wrong team. My tactics were all wrong. So I've got to take the blame. But as we know, Mourinho doesn't take the blame for anything. You know, he takes the credit all the time. I think he's like a little kid at times, to be quite honest. He takes the credit all the time. But when it comes to holding your hands up, it's somebody else's fault. And I think that's what has annoyed people more than anything else, because you read a lot in the paper since, this is not the Manchester United way, we're not playing the Manchester United way, we're not attacking as much as you can. And I think you've got to go to the heart of the problem as well, Nathan, in my opinion. It keeps coming back to Pogba. Keeps coming back to Pogba, because he described him as a complete midfield player, which he's not. And in recent times, as we say, he didn't even start the other day. Now, Pogba was signed to play in a position to knit everything together, like Modric does for De Bruyne, is doing it at City to a certain extent. He's not doing that, and he's not capable of doing that. So Mourinho is actually starting from scratch all the time. From the time he's come into the club to now, he has nobody to do what's needed to be done in the middle of the field. And in fact, in many ways, he's given up on Pogba. This was the record signing, supposed to be the major signing.
Yeah.
He's not doing it. And Mourinho has accepted now, in my opinion, because he's left him out of the team. Big match last night, big match on Saturday against Liverpool. He's left him out in recent times, which means he's lost faith in him. That he's not. And I always did believe that the role that Pogba was supposed to play in the team, he's not capable of doing it. Now, he is a talented lad. He might be playing elsewhere. And when he played at Juventus, again, I'm repeating myself a lot here, he played on the left-hand side with Pirlo, the architect of everything, to feed him with the ball and let him do his own stuff. They don't have a Pirlo. In fact, he was supposed to be the Pirlo of the Manchester United team. So they're all over the place. And I think that's why Mourinho is as he is. He can't pick a team. He hasn't got the player to do what's needed to be done.
Do you sense then, watching United, that actually Mourinho, still somehow almost 2 years in at United, doesn't really know what his best system is, what his best starting 11 is? You even look at somebody like Marcus Rashford, who, as you mentioned, barely started this year, comes in, does brilliantly against Liverpool, gets his two goals, and then straight away, 4 days later, switches wings.
I think that's right up to a certain point, Nathan. I think he might well know what's the best team he has available now, right? But it doesn't include a Pogba doing what he should be doing. So he's back to scratch all the time. You see, if you have a Pirlo, I think if you put a Pirlo in there, or a De Bruyne, or a Modric in that team, it would be a different team altogether. Because he'd knit everything together.
Would you have one of them with a Pogba?
Yeah, you could play Pogba right or left. Don't give him any responsibility. He can't take any. He's no sense of responsibility on the pitch. Ball comes to him, he can do a few tricks in a certain position like he did at Juventus, where he's left side of midfield, which is not a responsible position, really. When you're playing the middle of midfield, like Modric and that, you're the person who knits everything together, right? So if he played, say, on the left-hand side for Manchester United, I think he'd be okay. He'd be able to do what he's good at, which is to be players and there, score a few goals and that. But if he's bought with as the complete midfield player, this is where the big mistake has happened, I think. He's bought as the complete midfield player, which is, he's a Pirlo. He's a Modric.
Yeah.
And he's not. He can't do it, Nathan. He's no sense of responsibility. He's no sense of positional sense to do that particular job. So, therefore, Mourinho is starting from scratch. Like, from he was 18 months ago. He needs somebody like that to knit it all together. He hasn't got it. And none of the other players can do it. Matic can't do it. Matic can't do it. Herrera certainly can't do it. Carrick is finished. Well, he could never do it anyway. And he doesn't have a player to do that. So now there's no excuse for making the drastic positional sentence or personal changes for the match the other night.
Yeah.
I mean, even at the worst with Liverpool, you say, okay, we go with the same team. At your worst. Like, don't forget, Pogba wasn't in the team.
Does that put doubts into your mind? Because Paul, just going off on a rugby-related tangent, Paul O'Connell said one of the reasons Ireland are so good at the moment is it's a very simple game plan and they can be more aggressive in all aspects of their game because they're not thinking about anything else. They know exactly what they're going to do. They can be incredibly aggressive. Whereas with Manchester United watching them on Tuesday, like, they were quite passive. Like, they never seemed to fully have the aggression and the tempo you would expect from a team in a Champions League last 16 home tie. Is that because they're second guessing themselves?
Sorry, who said the rugby?
Paul O'Connell said it.
Well, you see, they're probably playing the best players in the best position. Mm. And he has the players to play in those positions. So therefore, they can concentrate and this is what we're going to do. But if you have a team where it's missing a Pirlo or a Modric, you can't do that with them. You know, you can't say to somebody playing in that position, you're a Pirlo, you do what Pirlo does. They're not there. So you're starting from scratch all the time. And everything has to be linked together. I mean, if you take Chelsea, Chelsea were well played the other night in Paris, but they had a go. But they've got little Kante in there, right? Kante and Matic played together last year.
Yeah.
That was their midfield. Well, it's two out of three of the midfield, right? Which were very, very good. Like, I'd say if he had Kante, he could knit them together, doing what he does, because he plays down around the middle of the field and he gets it from back to front and he knits it all together. At the moment, he hasn't got anybody like that. Pogba was supposed to be the man, right? He's been in for a long time. He can't do it. So he's struggling. But again, no excuse for they beat Liverpool without Pogba doing it. They had Matic in there who does a better job. So they beat Liverpool doing it. So I think that the common sense thing was play the same team. Yeah, don't make the drastic. Why make drastic changes when you've got it working up to a point? But you're right in what you say about the rugby team. In other words, that's my best team. You come to that conclusion as quickly as you can. That's my best team, and you play them as often as you can together, and they'll get better. Right, and you said Mourinho, which is on the point. He doesn't know his best team. And I don't think he does know his best team because he has nobody to do a vital job that needs to be done. So he's making changes around that particular position.
Does that also cause some discontent within the squad where Marcus Rashford, who's sitting on the bench for 3 months, gets a chance, one of the biggest games of the season, takes it, he's moved out of position. McTominay, 19, going up against Liverpool, playing really well in the middle of the field, finds himself dropped. Then everybody's looking over their shoulder thinking, well, what's he going to do next?
Well, it can't be right, Nathan. You know, I don't know what the spirit is in the Manchester United team, but success builds success, breeds success, you know? And if you go from Liverpool on Saturday, of course the players are going to question it. Like Rashford seems to be an innocent type of lad. I don't think he's a forward lad that would say to Mourinho, what are you doing? Like, he hasn't played for a long time. I think he was handling Rashford very, very badly because he seems to be a sensitive young player that you need to coax along. Not to say, no, you're not doing it, I'm leaving you out for a few months. This kid has great ability. I think he's playing out of position actually on the left or the right. But the fact is, on Saturday he was brought back on the left, scored two terrific goals to help to win the game for Manchester United. And next thing, he's playing on the right-hand side. Now, I don't think he's the type of kid to say to Mourinho, what the hell do you think you're doing?
Play me in the centre or I'm out of here.
And I don't think, to be honest, I don't think Mourinho is the type of guy that would stand for any of that. Now, the players, quite rightly what you say, could be saying it among themselves, which is even worse, because they're going to question, they have to be questioned last night, why are we playing that team? I think I saw a bit in the paper where Lukaku was actually being critical of it, you know? People were hiding, you know? I mean, imagine a player talking about your own players that people were hiding. I don't think they were hiding, to be quite honest. They just weren't good enough to do the job against not one of the great teams, don't forget. But you have to go back to the main tactic in any team is pick the right players in the right position that you have available to you. I don't think that happened with Manchester United. Because first of all, Rashford are playing on the left, he's now playing on the right. Mata is out of the team. Fellaini's back in the team to do what? You know, having played Liverpool a few days earlier.
Yeah. We'll take a very quick break. Plenty more to come from John. 53106 is the text number.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
You're welcome back to Thursday evening's football show. John Giles is still alongside me in studio. So that's Manchester United. We might talk about Chelsea, or maybe even we'll talk about Barcelona for a moment and where they are in comparison to the 2009-2011 vintage. We've spoken a lot today about central midfielders, and you mentioned Kante and De Bruyne and Modric. Where does Sergio Busquets fit into that sort of category
Barcelona? Yeah, he wouldn't be one of those. He's more a bit of a holding, you know, to call a holding player, but does a bit more than most of the holding players that we see. He does contribute to the game. But I think they have enough players in the middle field without having a Modric or a Kante or whatever to be good players to link it up in their own individual way. Not quite a Modric. I mean, I talk about Modric and Kante and De Bruyne because they're doing it as an individual. But I think Barcelona have, between the three players, reasonably good players to do it, to make up for one leading player.
So there's not as much expected of Busquets because get the ball to Iniesta, get the ball to Messi.
And you can always find Messi. Mm. See, this is why Messi is so great. Messi's a real team player. Messi doesn't stay up the pitch because it's not good to stay up the pitch unless you're Lukaku and that type of player. He comes back into midfield. And the genius about Messi, and I talked about it an awful lot, Nathan, positional sense. You know, positional sense, because you very see any of the analysts talking about positional sense. Positional sense is 90% of the job, actually, because everybody is vying for space in the pitch, in limited space. And what you see, the great players, he's plenty of room. Where did he get the room from? And you see Messi, he doesn't stay up the pitch, because staying up the pitch, you're going to be easily marked. He drifts back, but he drifts into the right position all the time. And he's the link-up. In other words, you don't have to be a great player in the Barcelona midfield. Now, Iniesta is playing as to find Messi, he finds you. And you can say, well, I have to give him the ball there. And he's so brilliant at it. He turns on it. And I just mentioned this before on the programme. Messi is absolutely great. I love him. Because even a 10-yard ball is always the right ball. If it needs a 20-yard ball, he sees it all the time to play the most effective ball in any given situation he's in. It might only be 10 yards, 20 yards of that. And of course, when he has to hit the 30 yard, 40 yards and beat players, then he does it. He's absolute genius. I think he's a brilliant player. So, but if you had Messi playing the Manchester United team, I think you wouldn't see the same Messi.
You don't think he's of such sufficient quality that no matter what team he goes to,
no,
suddenly
he is. But he has to have somebody to get the ball to. Like right. He has Iniesta and he has Busquets and he has
Rakitic
enough to have enough sense to give, because he makes it simple for him. But I think in the Manchester United central midfield position, they don't have anybody even to be able to do that. You know?
Who are the other players then that have that sort of awareness? And that clearly probably nobody has it to the extent that Messi has, but...
Nobody today. You know, there's some great players. Harry Kane is a terrific player, I think. Does it in his own way. But there's nobody as complete as Messi. Messi can come deep and be in forward position at the right time. Be deep at the right time. Natural footballer, brilliant on the ball, can turn on a sixpence, even if he's closely marked, goes for the ball all the time. Team player, plays for the team all the time.
You know, there's an awful lot that you can't teach what Messi has, but ability to pick out the right ball, whether it's 10 yards, 20 yards, is that something you can actually teach players to take option?
Not really, Nathan. You either have that or you don't. You can't, like one of the players in motion with most players, that's what makes them great players, because they don't know what they're going to do before they get the ball. But they make sure they make enough room for themselves. So, like, you'd always find with great players or bad players. When a bad player, after his first touch, has less room before he touched it. If you'd see Messi, after his first touch, no matter how close it is, he's more room.
Something opens up.
Opens up. It doesn't open up. He opens it up in the position he gets. You can't teach anybody. That's a natural thing. You know what I mean? There's some players you could say, well, even a stop clock is right twice a day. You know, and you say, well, they're inconsistent in that. But Messi actually knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He knows the position he's taking up. And he's an experienced player now. And as a type of player he is, isn't he? But he should get better every year because you're learning from match to match, which he has done. You know, people were saying, his legs have gone a little bit. Mm. He's better than ever. What is he, 28, 29?
He's 30 now, yeah.
Yeah, well, he'd be at the peak of his career at 30. Because every match and I think Messi is the type of player who thinks about the game. Every match you play, you learn from it, right? So if you're playing for 10 years, you learn an awful lot. Never everything, but an awful lot. And I think that Messi is at that stage of his career. Now, he's been brilliant all the way along.
That's maybe the most impressive part of Messi's career now, is that he's not just that guy who plays on the right-hand side of a front three who... Jinks in along into the centre, takes a shot. That actually, he's grown more influential for Barcelona in the last two or three
seasons.
Because
he's grown better as a player. You see, if you're a player like Messi is and a really intelligent player, you should get better every year because you played more matches. And I know from my own little, and I'm not comparing myself to Messi in any way, but I know myself from playing, if you think about the game, by the time you get to 30, 31, you never waste a step. You know? And I only got my own experience. When I was young, I was playing inside right, the ball, and I'd be up into the box.
You're conserving energy.
Yeah, totally. So the older you get, the less you have to run. So it doesn't say, you know, his legs have gone. Messi will probably is doing less running than he ever did. But he's getting more of the ball because he's learned the game and the positional sense in the game and get the ball from here and get the ball from here. I don't need to run up there. You don't waste a step. So the older you get, the less you run, more effective you become.
Did you feel you could be as effective at 31, 32 as you could when you were 25, 26?
Well, no, I'm not comparing myself to Messi.
No, but
anyway,
just that.
I felt I was at the peak of my career when I was about 33, 34.
Right.
Depends how, see, the legs is, that's a physical thing.
Yeah.
Right, you keep yourself right, you have to live yourself right, which I'm sure Messi does. You wouldn't be able to play like you did. Really, really look after yourself. That when you get to 30, 31, you're still in good nick, but you've got 10 years experience behind you. So you're doing less running. I don't go over there. I don't pass the ball there. I do that and do that, right? And then you become, in Messi's case, I think he's a better player now than he's ever been because he's learned. He's more experienced. When he was 27, 28, which is 3 or 4 years ago, he's played about 100 matches, 200 matches since then, right? And I think he's the type of fella that learns from every match because, you know, there's that old saying in football, you never learn everything in football. Even up to your last day of playing, you learn something, right? And there's an old saying in football as well. He's the type of player, he's played 10 years and he's got 1 year's experience. And then you got to go to, that lad has played 1 year, he's got 10 years experience. It's different players in different ways.
Just on that then, before we finish up, because maybe one of the big issues last night then for Chelsea was in the middle of midfield and Fabregas alongside Kante.
Yeah.
Whereas Fabregas does seem to look like a player whose legs are gone.
Yeah.
Whereas I would have thought, watching him growing up, that he was such an intelligent, smart player that actually he would have been learning in every game as well and actually would have been able to adapt his game, but he could still influence it now.
But there's two ways to it, you see. Like, some players can go physically, even looking after themselves, they go physically. I think that's happened to Fabregas. I think his head is just as good, but you still have to have the physical aspects to go and do it. Messi has it. Messi is still a very, very fit lad. You know, and everybody's different. I think Fabregas might well have learned what he's doing, but he can't do it anymore. So it's a combination of both, Nathan. You know, if you were talking to...
Do you look at Fabregas in a way and think, actually, if you were to try and play the game a different way, you could still influence it? Like, is he still trying to play the game he played when he was 21?
Well, it's difficult to know what's going on in his head, first of all. Because what happens with a lot of lads, they lose the ambition to do it. They lose the drive to do it. That's another aspect of it that we can't see. What we can see is what manifests itself on the pitch is Messi hasn't lost it. He hasn't lost his will to do it and the physical ability to do it. Now, in Fabregas' case, I think, looking at it now, I think he's lost the physical attributes now to do it. But I don't know what's going through his head.
Yeah, you know, whether he still wants it as much.
Does he still want to do it or not? You know, has he looked after himself? And I'm not trying to have a go at Fabregas, because it does happen to everybody. I've met players at 30, even looking after themselves, they can't do it anymore, right? Fabregas might be that type of player. He might want to do it, but he just can't do it.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying he didn't look after himself. I played with players who were great players, who looked after themselves really well, but still, when it got to a certain age, everybody's different. It tells on them. Messi doesn't, in my opinion, because he's such a fit lad, you know, and that's it's all part of the game. There's a physical aspect to it and there's a mental aspect to it. But if you keep yourself as fit as Messi has, and he's lucky to be able to do that, then I think there's another 2 or 3 years, as long as he wants to get even better.
Yeah, something to look forward to.
We can look forward to that, Nathan, yeah.
John, great stuff as always. Thanks a lot for coming into the studio.
Thanks, Nathan.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Now, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Simon Peach, who is the chief football writer at the Press Association. Evening, Simon.
Evening, how's it going?
Good, so we wanted to talk about Southampton. Mark Hughes has been brought in as manager for the rest of the season, a former Southampton player. And despite a slow start of the season at Stoke, when you look at the overall body of work from his managerial career, actually this looks like a pretty sensible decision, considering Southampton, quite often at this stage of the season when you're struggling, you can find yourself backed into a corner.
Yeah, I mean, sensible, but underwhelming as well. But again, at this time of the season, the options aren't plentiful. As you mentioned, he did play for Southampton between 1998 and 2000. He didn't do anything particularly remarkable, but he can do as manager. There's a bonus of around £1 million if he keeps the club up. And then there's the chance of getting Southampton to Wembley in his very first game against Wigan in the FA Cup quarterfinals this Sunday.
Mm. It's been a very strange couple of seasons at Southampton, because for quite a few years they were seen as the very model of how you should run a Premier League team, and they sold their best assets for massive prices and they seemed to invest it wisely. But going there, and I've been to St Mary's quite a few times this season, it's been pretty boring under Maurizio Pellegrino, which is probably the worst thing you can have said about you in the Premier League right now.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the Southampton are well used, the fans and the club are well used to losing their best assets, whether that is players or managers. I mean, I can't think of many other clubs around seeing their managers poached twice by other rivals in that league, in the shape of Koeman and Pochettino. Obviously, Southampton struggling to do that. Claude Puel came in. He didn't win over the players. He didn't win over the fans. The trade-off as a Southampton fan is we might lose our best players, but at least give us some entertainment. And as you said, they didn't get much of that this season. At least last season they got a few wins. At the moment, only West Brom have won fewer games than Southampton. That's why they're in such a dire predicament.
Mm. You look at their finishes in the league in recent seasons. They haven't been outside the top eight over the last four seasons. Getting to the League Cup, there were a lot of expectations around Pellegrino coming in. What went wrong? Was it clear from the start that this maybe wasn't the right fit?
Well, it's certainly clear from around December, and if Southampton go down, I think that's going to be the issue. They didn't act soon enough. They gave him too much time. There was a few moments earlier in the season where it looked like Pellegrino had made the step in the right direction, and this is the building block, such as it was a horrible end to the game at Manchester City, but they showed real spirit.
Mm.
And there was other moments where you go, right, this is a building block. Win against Everton, admittedly they had David Unsworth trying at that time, but there was moments that you could be used as a catalyst, and they weren't. And it became clear, I think, after the Boxing Day hammering at Tottenham that it wasn't going to work properly, and for some reason it's taken another 3 months. He was a lovely guy whenever I dealt with him, but it wasn't the right fit for whatever reason, and I think the manager himself basically admitted that in a statement to the fans, apologising really for the predicament he'd left them in.
I don't know if they're a particularly polite bunch of supporters down in Southampton, but generally when things are going wrong, it's not just the managers, it's not just the players, it's those behind the scenes who they really turn on and start asking questions of the board. What has the attitude been at board level and the changes that have taken place there, the Chinese investment, the Lieber family were obviously involved for so many years and seem to be doing a decent job while recouping money, making good purchases. Has the changes at boardroom level, has that had an effect on what's happened on the pitch?
It's a very, very good question. It's difficult to say. I mean, as you said, the Gao family bought an 80% stake at the club earlier in the season, completed that deal that's been in the pipeline for a long time. The Leavers still retain a 20% stake because their passion for the club that is built thanks to Marcus Lieber, the late Marcus Lieber, who's left that as part of his legacy. But not a peep's been heard of the Gao family. They've not made any noticeable changes to the boardroom structure. Les Reed is in charge of the football operations and was praised to the hilt rightly for his work in getting the club up from League One. He's been noticeably quiet recently. It does as you said, there's been a lot of anger shown towards the fans because they've not heard anything. I think that should be tempered by the fact that not a lot of Premier League football clubs are very vocal at the top of the club, but some of the decisions have been strained. As I said, the fact not to get rid of Mauricio Pellegrino when it was quite clear 2 or 3 months ago that it wasn't going to work is the key one. And another one would be in January, only signing Guido Carrillo, who so far just looks a bit not off the pace of the Premier League. So there's questions to be asked, but there hasn't really been any board changes, nor does there look to be anytime soon, really.
It's not that long ago. I remember being there when Ronald Koeman was in charge, and I think they might have had 5 or 6 academy players. Granted, it was towards the end of the season, but there was several players in the side at that stage under the age of 21, 22. And Les Reid has done an unbelievable job, probably not just for Southampton, but for English football over the last 5-10 years. Has that conveyor belt of talent started to run a little bit dry, or is that just natural considering how much success they've had in recent years?
Well, I think there's naturally peaks and troughs in things like this. I mean, a few years ago, in the same year, they had Luke Shaw, Callum Chambers, James Ward-Prowse, people like that. That isn't going to happen every year. It might not even happen every 5 years. It's just natural. But there are talented players still. Southampton have James Ward-Prowse, who's now the longest-serving player, an academy graduate, and probably future captain, to be honest. And Matthew Target is a very good left-back. He's currently a loan at Fulham, doing a very good job there. You've got Sam Queen, who's another left-sided player, and Josh Sims, who's been included in one of the England Youth Development squads today for his fine work in attacking midfield. So there is at the moment the Gareth Bales and Theo Walcotts, the players of that ilk coming through. But that doesn't mean that the well's completely dry. At least Southampton fans will be hoping.
They're currently a point outside the relegation zone. They have a huge game in the Premier League away against West Ham the weekend after next when the Premier League resumes. How are they fixed if they were to go back down? Like, I just look at the wage bill potentially, and geez, you dread to think how much they're spending per week on strikers alone between Carrillo, Long, Austin, Gabbiadini, 4 strikers who cannot buy a goal between them. I know Charlie Austin's had injury problems, and that's not even getting maybe to the players just behind, like Dusan Tadic, Sofyan Boufal, Nathan Redmond, who also maybe haven't contributed a huge amount this season.
Well, it's actually quite funny when you hear all those names and the problem has been scoring goals. Mm. But you're right, the team that went down in 2005, the people behind the board allowed it to get in such a financially irresponsible state that a club went to an administration were on the brink of folding in 2009. So you'd like to think that common sense has prevailed and the wage deductions are in there. And also, a lot of those players may have been underperforming this season, or in fact have, but they will have suitors elsewhere. And that is another way of clearing the books. Southampton are treading very dangerous line in terms of keeping in the Premier League, given they've only got 3 home matches left. Admittedly, they've not been great at St Mary's this season, but they've only got 3 home games left. One is Man City, one is Chelsea. So things aren't looking great. So you'd like to think they've got all their ducks in a row to ensure that there isn't another financial meltdown if and when they do go down.
Yeah, it is a difficult job for Mark Hughes, and granted, they're in FA Cup action, and maybe you win this weekend and suddenly there's a boost to everybody and you're taking a bit of confidence to that game against West Ham, a West Ham side who are in a dire run of form themselves. But I guess part of the problem when he's looking at the overall picture is that they've been quite a defensive side, but they concede a huge amount of goals. And even though they've had all this attacking talent as well, they can't score any goals. So he has to go and somehow have a dramatic improvement in one of those if they're to have some chance of staying up.
Yeah, I mean, Southampton were doing all right in terms of conceding goals for a while, and that, 3-0 defeat at Newcastle suggests that there are issues at the back. Mm. Virgil van Dijk situation, obviously, the staple there is that, around Christmas time. You'd think that Southampton have the tools to do a lot better than they are, both defensively and attack-wise. It's easier said than done, though. Otherwise, Claude Puel and most recently Pellegrino would have done a better job. You do think, and it's an old cliche, that Southampton do look too good to go down on paper. Mm. But as we've seen with the likes of Huddersfield and Brighton, it's about the components working together as a coherent unit rather than individual talent that will give you success in the Premier League, certainly at the bottom end.
It is a short-term contract that Mark Hughes has signed just until the end of the season. The reports are that he'll get a £1 million bonus if they stay up, which, considering the amount of money you get for staying in the Premier League, you probably could have even driven a harder bargain on that. Does a short-term deal suit everybody? An opportunity for Mark Hughes to re-establish his reputation if he can keep them up, and if he goes, well, you're not stuck with a long-term contract to pay off?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what wage you're on, but I don't mind £1 million for a couple of weeks' work. I think it works well for all parties. Southampton's main focus, from people I've been speaking to at the club, is the short term, naturally, because keep staying in the Premier League is such a big deal. £1 million in the grand scheme of things isn't a massive bonus, but that is, it's actually just under £1 million, but it's around that figure that he'd get to keep Southampton in the Premier League. It helps him re-establish himself after a difficult ending at Stoke. I mean, I've covered him at QPR, so I've seen him at his lowest ebb. I also saw his teams at Blackburn, which were fantastic. He did a good job with Wales as well. So hopefully Southampton fans will be getting the Mark Hughes of that era. He's a talented coach, clearly, and he hopefully can kick them up the backside, because I think that's what the squad needs at the moment.
Yeah, strong motivator is what they need, because I think we've probably established at this stage.
They have the talent
there. They just need somebody to get them moving.
Galvanize them, whatever it takes to get them playing a system that suits their qualities best. I mean, they've dabbled with it at times this season, but it has always seemed strange that Southampton haven't played a 3-man defence when you've got the likes of Cedric Suarez and Ryan Bertrand on the other flank, who can operate very well going up and down. So, yeah, hopefully he's got Wigan, which is a winnable game. Admittedly, they beat West Ham and Man City in their FA Cup this season. But that is a game that can get you to Wembley and really lift the mood around the club straight from the back against the League One side. So then he's got 2 weeks of the international break when, given the players have been in such poor form, not a lot of them have been called up. So he's got time to actually work with them on the training field.
Yeah, Ryan Bertrand's had the look of a guy whose mates have all gone off to college and he's stuck repeating all his in school for a final year or something.
he strikes me as the next one that might be out the door, but he's playing for a place in the World Cup this summer. He's got strong competition at left back. So hopefully with that kind of carrot at the end of not only not losing all their wages or half of their wages if they go down, and a lot of them playing for a place in the World Cup, that can gee them on along with the galvanising effect of Mark Hughes.
All right, great stuff, Simon. Thanks a lot for taking the call.
No problem.
Simon Peach there, chief football writer of the Press Association, talking about some of the issues facing Southampton. Mark Hughes confirmed as manager until the end of the season. That's more or less us done for tonight's football show. The winner of the weekend family pass for the Outdoor Revolution show, along with a one-night stay in the Clayton Hotel in Ballsbridge, is Jason Maloney from Dublin 14. We're going to be back tomorrow morning, bright and early as always, 7:45 a.m. You can join Adrian and Owen for OTBAM. They're going to be looking ahead to Gold Cup Day at Cheltenham. John Duggan will join them. Plenty of Grand Slam talk as well. And we're going to be back tomorrow evening on the radio, 7 o'clock, with an exclusive feature-length interview with Jamie Heaslip, his first interview since he has announced his retirement. He'll be joining us in studio. Kevin Kilbane will be in the presenter's chair. He'll be looking back on the Gold Cup and a whole lot more besides. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning online on our social channels and on the radio tomorrow evening at 7. Tom Dunn is up next. Good luck.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.